today on Training Group Live. My friends, Tim and David, give me the rundown on PCSL Nationals. We talk about the good, the bad, and the amazing potential the organization has.
Welcome to Training Group Live, your home for all things practical shooting. So make ready, it's time to train.
Welcome to Training Group Live. On deck today, my friends, David and Tim.
How's it going?
What's up, guys?
What's up?
So, we got a lot of stuff to talk about, but you guys both attended PCSL Nationals, and I want to talk about it because I don't know much about it, honestly. Does this sound fair enough?
Yeah, absolutely. We just got back from it, was like 2-3 weeks ago?
Yeah. So, I mean, just shoot me straight. What's the deal? Like, what's the format? Is this thing set up like a USPSA match where it's a bunch of different stages? You're in a squad and you just travel around from stage to stage?
Yeah, for the most part. So probably, let's see, 12 stages. We had two that were more like natural terrain, kind of with your multi-gun. Two kind of had more of like an IPSC rifle vibe. From what I've gathered, having not shot at this rifle. And then the rest of them were pretty much Bay style stages. Some were pistol only, some rifle, some mix of both. Some of the stages, like literally it was like a USPSA stage for pistol dropped on side on top of a USPSA stage for PCC, and remember them both, have fun. And then some were obviously very different. Jeff, what's your take on it?
I would agree with that. For those who don't know, the max range for PCSL is 200 yards with an 8 MOA target, right? So that's the biggest difference between what most people think of, like 3-gun, 2-gun, and USPSA. Obviously, they're not going to set out stages at 200 yards for pistol. That's more so for rifle. But the stages were big enough to where you could drive from bay to bay, and essentially you work out of your car.
Really?
Yeah. It was actually super... I don't want to say they were lax with their safety, but it wasn't as like an RO looking for an appendix TQ type of deal. It was more so like, okay, like, is your gun ready? All right. Like, yeah, come to the ready table with it. It didn't have to be bagged like PCCs usually, or like most of the time it was actually pretty like flowing, as I'm going to call it.
So walk me through having a carbine then. Like, you get there and it's in your trunk. Do you flag it then? Is it muzzle up? Or is it at muzzle your side up, or slung?
Muzzle up, I think, is in their rule book. You don't have to flag. If you want to, you can. You go up to the safe table, which we'll talk about in a second, put that down, and then go do your thing. USPSA, obviously, safe table, no ammo. That didn't appear to be a thing. I don't know if that's in a hard rule book anywhere, but they kind of treat like every berm as a safe area. And I saw guys putting, myself included, rifles, and then their ready mag, they're gonna load into the rifle and they start the stage on the same table right next to each other. Had no issues. One major thing that we saw that was different, which kind of skips ahead to like things that maybe didn't quite work well yet, was this preload thing. The idea being everybody's down resetting, Jeff just shot, I get pulled up, I'm in preload, I load and make ready, I stand off to the side in a safe little box up to against a berm, and I wait until everyone clears the stage, and then as soon as they're off, you walk right up. Are you ready? Stand by. Beep.
Okay.
Which, the downside, yeah, talk about the downside that though was usually when people are resetting in USPSA, I'm next to shoot. I can go like do a quick like
walk through
rehearsal, but because you're in the preload area, you're stuck there. You can't move.
Because now you got hot guns on you.
Yeah, even for your visualization and stuff, that's a bit different than what most people are used to for. Like normally, well, for me, I'll speak for me. When they're patching the targets, if I'm not walking, maybe I'm sitting there just looking goofy with my eyes closed, just kind of walking through it first person or remembering a sequence or something I want to do or something like that. So it sounds like you're busy with tasks the whole time until you get the standby beep.
Yeah, when it turned in. Go ahead, Tim.
They have a flight system. So the way they tried to break it down, at least, was say we had 12 guys in the squad. Flight A is the first six. Flight B is the second six. While flight A is shooting, none of them are resetting. So it's just flight B going up, paste the targets, paint the steel.
I like that.
Once all of A, good idea and execution, honestly, too, for the most part. once all of A is done, you then B is up. The issue that I saw with it was I think A got like a usually four minute walkthrough. B would then get like a 2 or 3 minute walkthrough. It was definitely much shorter and abbreviated, which, yeah, the idea is you've seen the stage. But say you don't have a concrete stage and you roll up on this thing, you get a sort of a quick walkthrough, but A is supposed to be the only people walking it. You walk people or watch people shoot, then you get an abbreviated walkthrough. I could see for someone that didn't get time to get there early enough to walk all stages, or a newer shooter, I could see that being a harder timeline to learn the stage, all the targets, build a plan, and then execute it properly.
So yeah. Sometimes what happened too is depend upon if the stage was a longer stage, they actually excluded the flights and it was just all 12 shooters. So you sometimes have to time it to where like you weren't next up, but in the hole, and then you could do your quick walkthrough, right? While the person who technically was next up was in the preload area. And then, so that way, when you were stuck in the preload area, you already did your quote unquote like rehearsal real quick. It was kind of, you had to time it.
Which is definitely something like by like day three, we kind of had the flow. Like I'm like two guys out, like Jeff just said, I go do my walkthrough. I'm thinking about preload. That way I'm in the preload little like confinement cage. I'm actually doing a good visualization of the whole thing.
Okay. So it's 3 days of shooting. Were you, is it like half day formats? Were you there for 6 hours a day? How much were you on the range every day?
So I can, I'm looking at the schedule now. The way they did it was similar to USPSA NATS, the AM, PM, AM, okay. Or PM, AM, PM. Half day format, and they started at 7 and usually by like 11:30, 12 lunch swap to, you know, the PM squad and vice versa. I would say the one thing I did like how they did match day 3 was, even though there was technically 12 stations, there was like two stations where they were in the same bay. So even though technically there was 4 stations per day, you could actually get a rotation in. So on the third day, you only had 3 bays to go through. And so instead of going from like 7 to 12, you now went from 7 to 10. So then the quote unquote PM crew on day 3 could start at like 10:30, 11 o'clock. And so the entire match was finished by like 1 or 2 o'clock in the afternoon on that Sunday.
Which was nice.
It made, you know, how typically NATS, USPSA NATS is like PM squad doesn't finish until like 4 or 5. Everyone has to go to a different location for a banquet. And then like 6, 7, 8 o'clock rolls around really easily. We're like this. I think we were done on Sunday at like 4.
Dude, five. I think we were done as in off the range.
No, done it after the banquet.
Like, oh, yeah, easily.
Okay.
Oh, this sounds,
the timeline
sounds okay.
They had some kind of growing pains day 1, and then it seemed like they were pretty close on day 2, and then day 3 flew by.
Yeah, you were fighting daylight on some of the stages. Like, I know my last stage on day 1, they almost called it based on how the sun in the mountains were. Like, the sun was gone, and it was just, like, low light almost conditions on shooting the last stage.
Hey man, just bring your nods.
Dude, I almost pulled our rental car over. I was like, are you good, man? He's like, yeah, I think so. I'm great.
Well, I don't want to talk about gear all day, but like, what's the, I guess like the biggest thing is like, is this an LPVO or red dot? Like what do you need to have on your rifle? I assume your pistol's more or less, you know, I mean, it is what it is, a red dot or iron sights, but what does the rifle need to even be to be competitive at this?
I would say for most people that are training in a practical style with a carbine, you've got a red dot, you're fine. You can go out and shoot one. If you have a 3x or a better magnifier, that would definitely help. For the guys that are coming from multi-gun and already shoot LPVOs and or with offsets, go with that. Like whatever you have the higher level of familiarity with.
If you had just a plain red dot without a tripler, no magnifier, would you be okay? Or would you be fine? Really? Okay.
So I shot with a 3x and I used it on 2 stages, and I have enough familiarity shooting like that. I would have been fine without it. It would have been slower, but I didn't put it back on after stage 12 and 1 on day 1.
Okay.
There was only maybe 2 stages where a tripler or a 1x6 would have helped. And mainly if you had mist, you could see splash better compared to just a straight red dot. But you have to remember, it's an 8 MOA target rule. Like, that's massive.
Yeah, that's important. I didn't realize that.
Like, you could...
Yeah, it's, so like,
it's, I and switched that's steel gears.
Or paper, right?
Yes.
Yes. Both.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so like the challenging shots, if you were to call it that,
red dot,
six or eight inch plate around 100, 120. It's probably the furthest. I mean, especially with the 8 MOA rule, you're looking at an 8 inch plate at 100. And then let's see, there was some small steel at about 50 or 60, about yay big, with like a little T zone basically, or K zone, like they call it there, for rifle. And then pistol, farthest shot being what, 50 meter C zone steel.
Yeah, steel though. So it was,
yeah,
it was noticeable. Okay.
Yeah.
So if you had like a 1 or a 2 minute dot on your rifle, you'd be good to go.
You're good.
You would have been fine. Yeah, honestly speaking. Yeah. Like I did a 1 to 6, like, and I swapped to that 2 weeks prior, and I kind of regret it because I know. It's like I've never used an offset, never used a 1x6 in 2 weeks prior to that. So it's like, let's do this. Cause you know, they're like, hey, the max is 200 yards. So I figured there'd be a lot of 100 to 200 yard shooting.
Sure.
And what, 3 of the 12 stages, like, is the only thing I really needed. So I was using the offset for 9 stages majority of the time.
Especially being like, so we were told by someone that shot the match a year prior, like, oh, no, you need an LPBO. And I had planned on running one, waiting on one on a back order. So I was like, okay, I'll run a red dot and a magnifier. Like, I have a background with that, so that should be just fine. And in hindsight, I think that's the easier thing. That being said, the top guys in both divisions, at least top 3 or 4 or so, I think minus Mason Lane, shot LPVOs. So I think it's whatever you are competent with or the best with is going to probably be the best answer, like most things. For most guys going from a USPSA, maybe even PCC background, red dot all day.
There's also the difference too, where like you can have multiple gun setups within the same division. Right. So
what?
Yes. So I could be running my 1x6 with an offset, right? And practical in this case, but for those 3 stages. But if I want to change to a red dot, as long as it made practical rule divisions, you know, check the box, I could run that. So I could run a 1 to 6 or a 1 to 10, whatever you're running, on 3 of those stages, the long stages, and then I could just either, generally it says change the upper, but or just change your gun to a red dot and run the rest of the stages that way.
What? Is this like golf clubs then? What if I had a complete separate rifle that was 0? Can you change your whole rifle then also? Or does that be the same lower?
I think you can change your whole rifle.
Oh man, it's like golf clubs. I'll just bring a couple
different ones. There was no gear check. Like, I think it was mostly like an honor system. Maybe ROs were looking to be like, this look like a compensator on it. And maybe they're looking at muzzle devices on rifles, but I'm pretty sure a lot of the guys in the competition division were going from like an IPSC style 18 inch SPR rifle to a full blown PCC for the base stages.
Okay.
Which, like, why wouldn't you? You know?
Well, the reason especially I asked about optics, my first is local, it was PC, I think it was PCSL rules, or no, I'm sorry. It was UM, I don't know, some, what, UML maybe, United Multigun, whatever. In my local, my local club, they had a 2-gun style match. I'm like, oh, my friend Kenny and I, let's go. And I just take the stuff I have. And I show up with a 16 inch gun with an EOTech on it. Well, I didn't realize they had plates out to 300 yards. They were varying sizes. They had little clay pigeons. They use these, I'm not exaggerating. So it's a cardboard poster board with these clay pigeons that they've got put inside of them that you have to break. And it's at a distance that you could punch a hole in it with your naked eye and maybe not see it unless like you shoot it enough where it falls out. So anyway, So this was where like Kenny and I are like, oh boy, well, we know we need to make some changes before the next match. So that's why I was just curious what you need to bring. You guys talked about muzzle devices. Is that division specific? Are you allowed breaks or does it have to be like a flash hider?
So I want to say the way the rule book reads is essentially a full-blown break, like most of us would think about, giant holes through the side of the device.
Yeah.
That's competition only. Now, it gets into a weird gray area where they will call a compensator or a hybrid device that has a flash hider in it, blah, blah, blah. That is okay for practical.
And gotcha.
in my opinion, the way that's supposed to be intended is I wouldn't be a total douchebag to shoot this thing right next to a teammate in this make an indoor or vehicular environment. If that was my patrol rifle or whatever.
Like
it was
a war comp kind of a deal where it's like,
yeah,
hybrid. But
war comp's good. Yeah. Brian Nelson, he won practical. He ran war comp. We ran Cobalt RCB. It's a reduced concussion break. So like breaks in the name. Somehow that fits in practical.
Yeah, but it has a flash hider on the end, so it
sounds
good.
Practical exactly. to me.
That's a flash hider. Hey, I have it running for Max, and I've seen him say before that it's practical legal, so we ran with it, and it's a very good device. Also pretty affordable. But then, yeah, for any full-blown break, you're going to be in competition.
Can you use cans, suppressors?
Yes. Yes. So
what about timers, picking up the last shot then? Sorry, go ahead.
Well, so I was worried about that, right? We both talked about it, using suppressors at this match. My main concern was timers, right? I was like, I don't want much reshoots, my first nationals or match of this type. Like, I don't want any more variables than I can add. So we didn't use them. I think if you're shooting practical and you have a suppressor, you should absolutely be using that. Because that, like, we know that's recoil defeat. The gun doesn't move.
RC3 is recoil delete on my
gun. 100%. So, like, I will be running an RC3 next year.
Yep. Yeah, they had their timers tuned really well because, like, even I've dealt with this at USPSA matches where shooting the PCC with subs, like, unless they were, like, right on the muzzle, like, I would have to reshoot because it wasn't picking up. But they definitely tuned the timers to where, like,
oh, cool.
It was, I don't know of anyone who had a reshoot due to last shot not being picked up due to a can.
We had, I think, at least four guys in our squad shooting suppressors. And not a single reshoot due to it. It was pretty impressive, honestly. They did a great job with it.
Sign me up. That's what I want then.
Yeah. But right. Flow through is definitely, it's if you're going to shoot BCSO with a can, flow through, you should.
It really triggers
people. I regret
not
doing it.
I love because people really get annoyed, especially about Surefires. But I like, there's two different types of cans. There's flow through and non-flow through. And there's one type I want and one type I don't want.
Well, especially, but, Joel, you know this and I know this as a lefty. Yes. If it's not flow through, like, I hate running a can because I hate eating cancer in the face every time I pull the trigger.
Yeah.
So.
And even as a non-lefty, like, the amount of times I've come home and been told to go wash my face, just running a non-low back pressure can, a very typical William RC2, like, it's disgusting. You're eating all that, not to mention breathing it in. Yeah.
Yeah, people can talk like, "Oh, you get the vented charging handle or whatever." Like, no, dude, that's not.
No,
the way
it's still.
Like,
I'm still eating
I'm
it
sure
from the ejection port.
I've never tried it.
Yeah. I've tried it one way or the other. With RC3, at least, I don't care. It doesn't matter one way or the other. Anyway.
Yeah.
So, what about, are the stages complicated? Walk me through this, like I'm dumb, which I am. But there's some targets, a different target type for pistol compared to rifle, right?
Yeah.
And then, do you have to ground your gun, or could you like hot holster and then unholster to shoot it? Like that platform again, how does this all work?
Okay, so most of the stages were Bay style, kind of USPSA-ish in nature, probably between 5 and up to 40 meters or yards for both. You'd have two different targets. Brown side of the target would be your conventional pistol target, and then the backside white no-shoot in USPSA, that's a rifle target. The way they do no-shoots in PCSL is they paint it red with black stripes on it. That's your no shoot, which there was a lot less no shoots, probably just paint them all up.
Surprising.
A lot less no shoots than like a normal match and that I've experienced before.
Sure.
So you would just build your two stage plans based off your two color schemes of target. As for the hot holstering, I think it's allowed in the rule book. Basically, every time you were going to go from pistol to a rifle, there was a dump barrel right there and you just place it on safe. Or if you can't, I guess you can drop your mag, rack last round out and drop it in the dump barrel. Grab your rifle and then go to your stage plan.
Okay.
And then opposite for a rifle. If you started rifle, go ahead and place the rifle on safe, dump it, grab your pistol out of your holster. Or I guess you could probably pre-stage in a barrel if you were concerned with your holster not retaining your pistol, and then go do your stage plan for pistol.
They made it really easy to decide on not hot holstering. Like every time, the way they designed the stages, there was always a dump bin. I don't know the official name, but like it was slower to reholster than it was just to drop it in and grab your rifle right on top or vice versa, or like drop your rifle and then skin your pistol. Like it didn't make sense to hot holster anywhere in the competition.
And I think even on the one stage where you had a sling on to really like have the idea of a hot holster come into anybody's minds, you were required to dump into a barrel before a little small bucket thing before running up a hill. So like there was never going to be a time where you're like, I have a hot holster. For anybody that's ever done it or thinks that's unsafe, it's not really concerned there.
It's not unsafe if you're trained. But if you're inexperienced, maybe you get overcome by events because there's a lot going on at the match you kind of forget stuff, like accidents can happen. But if you're trained, it doesn't make me uncomfortable at all. That's why I was just curious.
So and they, it seems like they did address a little bit of this. There was, I forget what the term is, but like if you were a newer shooter, like you could be coached, right?
I like that.
Coachable shooter.
Coachable shooter. Like apparently, according to some of the ROs, like there was more coachable shooters than led on to believe. But they also set up rules where, like, if they had multiple shooting areas, like if it was a long bay, like a 100-meter bay, like if you stayed shooting area one was far, and then if you moved into shooting area two, which was closer, and you started shooting in shooting area two, you could not return to shooting area one, and they would call stop, and then all your targets would be scored as is. It seemed like a safety mitigation to prevent, like you were saying, newer shooters running back uprange with something hot to engage in something, especially when you have like multiple ROs following you around.
Okay. No, this all makes sense. So were you typically starting with the pistol or rifle, or was it really like a 50-50 or just a preference thing? Was there like one platform always made it sense to start with?
I want to say you kind of had to start with a platform. Do you remember a decision point, Jeff?
There was not really, because most of the time it says, hey, you'll be starting in shooting area two, which is then labeled as like pistol only, or hey, like the starting condition will be pistol hot and in your holster, and then your rifle in the ready condition, which is stock and belt ready to shoot. I think there was only one shooter that like, even starting with rifle, because there was a dump barrel right in front, they just threw the rifle in the dump barrel and started pistol, where majority of everyone else just started rifle. So like, I
don't know if there was a benefit there.
I don't know either. But it was interesting. But it was kind of dictated for you. It really was. Like, it didn't make sense for you to go out of your way to get your rifle if you were supposed to start pistol and vice versa.
Okay. It doesn't sound like the stage plans were that tough. I mean, this, for me, just listening to it, it sounds like, man, there's two different guns. This is a lot to go back and forth. Were there people that could not get a stage plan figured out in the 4 or 5 minutes, like your walkthrough time?
Yeah. Yeah. A couple of the stages were a little more complicated. I mean, like, look at it like this. You're taking your 30-second USPSA stage and doubling it.
Yeah.
And the amount of targets.
And then you've got two guns to use. Yeah.
Totally. So there was definitely a couple people on our squad, and I'm sure plenty of on other squads, rightfully so, that were forgetting targets or forgetting their plans. Kind of like we've all seen it at match, like,
sure,
do I go next feeling. But I don't think it was because the overall complexity of anything was that high. I would say that was, you made a joke, like there maybe was more coachable shooters than are like actually registered. I don't know that if you have never shot something like that, that's like the match to show up to, right? Like, no. You definitely go to like a local event of PCSL and try it out first, because I've been shooting a little while. Like, I definitely was like, oh, holy crap. Like, this is way more to remember. And if you think like you have time to make a mistake flubbing a reload or over transitioning on something on a 12-second stage, like, okay, do it 55 seconds. Like, there's going to be things that pop up that you have to deal with.
I would say another thing on top of that was, apparently the previous year, 2023, was like everything was mirrored. Like, so if I just ran my pistol, I just ran the rifle the same way.
Okay.
And I wasn't there. I'm just going by secondhand. But this year, it wasn't like that at all.
No.
Like, there's maybe two stages that were kind of mirrored. But most of the time, like, your pistol layout was going to be slightly different than your rifle layout, because the targets weren't stacked the same way throughout the entire thing. And you had to think of like certain stages had pistol shooting only areas versus rifle shooting only areas. So yeah, like totally. It wasn't a complete mirror. Like, well, if I go left to right with my pistol, that means I have to go right to left because of the dump box with my rifle. No, it wasn't necessarily like that most of the time.
Okay.
Yeah. If your pistol stage plan was position 1 through 4, it did not mean rifle would go 4 through 1, like he's saying. It'd be like 4, 3.5, 2, 3. Like, it was definitely different every time, which made it a lot of fun. Like, there was definitely a lot of challenges. And then they had so two pistol only and two rifle only stages, which I had a lot of fun on. Those were cool. Just like focus on one thing. And then two that were definitely stretching out the, I'll say IPSC value, kind of again with rifle type of shooting, like 30 to 60 or 70 yards on paper with partials, like very deliberate, very reactive in nature rifle shooting, which I thought were awesome.
Dude, I like that.
Yeah, it was fun.
What about officiating? You guys talked about it a little bit, but was like as far as ROs, scoring, range commands, any of that stuff, like any thoughts, anything, or just uneventful?
Definitely very forgiving. And I'm not saying like I saw something that I was like, oh, I should have been. They were definitely not looking to DQ anyone. They were definitely very not lenient, but understanding and like not freaking out about the 180. Think about like your crowd of probably law enforcement, military shooters that go to USPSA match and they're like, oh, the 180 stupid and all these rules, blah, blah. This was definitely a very friendly environment for people with that mindset of like kind of bigger boy rules. Again, not that anybody was breaking the 180 or anything crazy, but the officiating, and it wasn't lax. It was just also not overly like safety concern for no reason at all, right? They were assuming people were doing the right thing. As for calls, they were very fair. Like, hey, yeah, you hit this steel, but you don't have more than 50% of a diameter hit in the round on it, so it didn't go down, so you don't get it. Like, they were very just like, this is what it is, man.
Okay, cool, whatever.
Okay.
Yeah, I would say
I didn't see a single issue.
It depends on the natural terrain stages. You have to think about it too. Like, the 180 is constantly moving, right?
Right.
So if I start shooting, you know, to your 12 o'clock, but then I have to run to my 9. Now, technically, the 180 has moved because now the targets I have to engage are actually technically at my 9 o'clock straight ahead of me, which becomes my new 12. And so the 180 is always changing. So there was really no hard, fast 180. And it also depends upon, like, where the targets were placed. Now, in those stages, they're like, hey, when you're coming to this position, like, make sure the 180 is technically not past this. But it was very generous because they realized people are running around with rifles and pistols. And as long as people stayed far enough back, the 180 was still technically a 180, but it was always like shifting and moving.
Okay.
Yeah, from talking with guys that shoot three gun, it was definitely more of that kind of a crowd in terms of just ROing and, you know, load make ready, all everything like that. Like, down to even the scoring too. Another thing that I saw was, and it only happened a couple times, but they were very good about being like, hey, people have been having trouble with this one thing. If you are here, this will go better than if you are over here. So they're definitely a very, very user-friendly RO crew. And I think like my biggest takeaway, which I said to Mac, is like, dude, your ROs are killing it. Like, these guys are happy to be here. They're very polite. They're very That's fun awesome. To be around. Like, it was a solid crew. It wasn't like the doomsday USPSA FUD crew that we've all probably
Known about far at some from point. It.
I've never heard of that before. Can you tell me more? What are you talking about, Tim?
I think you have plenty of podcast capture.
Yeah, man, you got to look for somebody to mess up.
Yeah.
If they aren't having a bad day, we'll make sure they are.
I will say, and I know on our list, and ROs are great. The stages, they weren't too hard or it. Complicated person. If you're an adequate shooter and you're used to memorizing complicated stages, I think it would have been just fine. I think the one thing I was disappointed in terms of like shot difficulty was there wasn't a whole lot of tough shooting. Like they say they go out to 200 yards, right? But no, there wasn't a target out at 200 at all. And I don't know if that was due to target limitation or steel size. But like the far targets were all open targets. There was no far partials that I could think of that were past 25 yards with a rifle.
Was there any height over bore shooting, like close, nasty stuff where you have to know your offsets?
A little bit, not much. Mostly interacting with vehicles or like low ports with a rifle where guys can get themselves into trouble. Sure. I definitely agree with Jeff. Like, I think there's one head box, which was like shoulders and head box at like, what was it, like 40 on the left side of the rifle only stage, where like there was like, that was like the one rifle target where I remember being like, exactly where you
were. Yeah.
Yeah.
Everything else was definitely, you could send three safely, even if it was like a 50% partial over, and you'd be okay. And I don't think it could have been like a steal limit issue, because like I think it was Targets USA. They had every type of steal and more than
they had some really good steal out there.
It was amazing. So I don't know if that was a decision to keep it like super, we'll say, newer PCSL shooter friendly to make the targets not like super imposing and hard. But you definitely could have gotten more, I think, on stage 12 and 1, as well as maybe on other stages to give some, like, we'll say, difficult shooting. But I also like to play devil's advocate. I think we've all been to matches where it's like, yeah, none of these targets were hard, and yet people are making tons of mistakes. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, you just go get yourself in plenty of trouble with easy shots.
I don't know. Joel, we've talked about, like, hey, like, matches should generally be about a B-class shooter, right? And then, like, whoever does it the best wins, right? I agree with that. I would say environment played a little bit of factor on 12 and 1, particularly 1, which was kind of like a natural terrain's, I want to say jungle run, but it was also in the desert, wasn't really much of a jungle, where like if you had got it like around high noon, 2 o'clock, like there wasn't a whole lot of shadows playing against you. But if you were like that early morning or late evening crew, like apparently there were some competitors complaining about like, hey, like I can't even see the targets. Now you add in, if you went left or right, I think Tim experiences the dust splashing would now cover the targets altogether and you couldn't really see it. Whereas like if you went right to left, that was an issue because like the wind and the shadows weren't playing a factor. Like I'm not going to say it wasn't a factor, but at the same time, you can't have all competitors just shoot between 10 and 2. It's not realistic.
Are you allowed to have a light on your firearm and can you activate it while you're shooting?
I don't think they have an issue with it, but I don't know. Even your crazy turbo would have helped.
This is a turbo. How'd you know?
Because you tried to tell me about it before, and I'm like, that thing's blinding.
No, the so stage one, what I'm talking about is the targets.
I know you don't have one, so that's why I like showing the targets in here.
They were out to like 120 to 160, so like there was no way like your light was it was gonna affect it at all.
No, and I think so. What Jeff's talking about, I saw the video and like I could totally see how this happened. And I think it was like a first person shooter cam of one of the competitors. You can't see anything. And then even like I self-imposed bad luck. I went to war with some stuff, way too many makeup shots, turned up a churn of dust. And it's like I'm on 6 on this one side. Can't see it at all. And fortunately, we talked to your friend, Mike Pannone, who you got on here. I remember him saying, hey, if you can't find this target, just find the stem of the base and just come up. And so I was like, okay, there's the base. Cool. And just sent a couple shots and heard a ring. And I was like, thank God, I'm out of here.
Mike's such a good guy.
Completely obscured by dust. Yeah, no, that saved me like 2 days later after he said it. So thank you, Mike.
Wow, very cool.
Yeah. And I think at the awards banquet, they were saying the person who shot the most no shoots actually got a prize. And yeah.
I wish I'd known that.
Yeah, I know.
That's fun.
Joel, can you guess the amount of no-shoots out of 12 stages that were shot the most out of an entire PCSL Nationals?
Oh, I don't know. I hate to even guess. Tell me.
I believe it was 7. Correct me if I'm wrong.
Oh. 7.
Yeah.
I wish there's no... Yeah, I don't know another good one.
And they won a Gucci prize, too. So it's... If I had known I would have just shot no shoots.
Yeah, next year, if you're not going to like top 20 it or so, just start crushing no shoots and hoping the best.
Oh, wow. No, I figured it would have been much more.
No, 7.
There wasn't a ton of them.
No, there wasn't.
Well, I mean, I don't know.
Yeah.
It's tough for you guys to say or to speculate. Maybe, hopefully, people won't take offense. There's a genre or a type of shooter. I just call them a T-Rex shooter, honestly, because like I could just say that and people pretty much know what I mean, where like they have a rifle and they have a pistol. They like practicing. They probably don't shoot USPSA, but for what I've seen, like PCSL is a mechanism to get some of the T-Rex type of people out, where they've been training with a rifle and pistol and they want to have a way to test it. So I like if like the difficulty is not crushing, because it is more likely to encourage people to come out with duty style gear, just having a red dot and a more or less plain Jane rifle, that they could actually be competitive, hit the shots. And let's be honest, like that's probably the average skill levels B or C class, something like that. So still be able to finish the match, not get demolished or punished and still have a good time. And the fast guys are always going to be the fastest. And so anyway, that's what kind of what I'm seeing. It seems like it's like drawing more people in. So anyway, I hope PCSL does that.
So I'm sure there's a way to look at this too. I know I'm going to butcher this. Hitfactor.info, it's something or rather, they did a bunch of data on it. And like the bulk of the entire match is like B class, like probably at least 40% of the people in DC
like
are roughly what they would call B class, to your point. And then I think definitely we saw this on our squad. There was way more guys wearing what I would call like a duty style rig than like a double alpha belt. Like that was way more common.
I think that's cool. Whether
it's I don't want my pistol popping out when I'm running. So
true.
Yeah.
Yeah.
True.
And that was another thing, like on Rifle Only Sages, which was nice, was that you could just go ahead and put your pistol on the save table and just run your rifle only stage. Like that wasn't an issue at all, which was nice. That. It was even suggested, like, hey, you probably shouldn't run with your pistol if you don't have to.
Mm-hmm.
So,
no, that's good. You just
protect having a setup too, having like recently got a different belt setup, doing two and three gun this year, being able to change shit around definitely was advantageous. Like rifle only stage, okay, like Jeff said, pistol's coming off, pistol mag's coming off, I'm putting another rifle mag on, pistol only stage. Okay, I know I'm gonna have two reloads because this steel's crazy, the Hunter Constantine steel.
I saw the belt stage.
Have an insurance policy.
Yeah.
So like having ability to change your equipment definitely would be helpful.
I like that.
But again, you have two pistol mags and a rifle mag on your belt, you're fine. You can shoot this.
No, I agree, Joel. It was, I would say the overall match difficulty, I would say between my and Tim's experience was it was adequate. But if I view it from a newer shooter, they're doing themselves a disservice if this is their first PCSL match going to this match, because it's compared to the average Joe, if you will, like, there were some difficult shots to them. I can completely understand that.
No, makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. Especially some of the movers. I think they had every type of moving target at this match.
Oh, the one mover.
Some of them were bonuses, but like a lot of them were not. And I think if you've never shot at a regular plain Jane side swinger, like 7 yards in a USPSA match, like you're going to have a hard time here. Examples being they had swinging steel with like the K zone. For those that don't know, it's all of like my eyebrows down to like my mouth. That thing swinging at 5 or 7, two of those as bonuses. They're moving decently fast. Like you had to trap and track it kind of at the same time because you're coming off of a piece of steel. They had side swingers, top swingers. They had the Holy Monkey, which was this like crazy unpredictable bobbing thing behind a no shoot barrier. So you have to wait for this thing to come out. And also you need 3 rounds on it.
Oh my.
They had a conventional swing. Oh yeah. They had a clay pigeon. So popper activates clay pigeon. You pop up and shoot it. If you are Jeff, you shoot it. If you're Tim, you shoot at it.
Hold on. Are you shooting a clay pigeon out of the air with a pistol or rifle?
Yeah, pistol was at like 15 yards.
They're not. They're not worried about having like a backstop for the bullets, or is it because it's the desert?
No. So the burn was pretty high.
I'll go back and look at my video to make sure, but yeah, I'm pretty sure you were very safe. I think it went like halfway up the berm when you're looking at the back.
No, I was just curious. This is just way different stuff than USPSA.
Oh, absolutely. They had a regular spinner, but it was on a track. So once you activated with taking your foot off the gas pedal, basically, this thing starts sliding down a track at like, 20 or 30 yards away while it's waving at you. Rifle swinger, we'll say 60. And then they had a spinner too. So an actual spinner from like 3-gun where you hit top bottom, cause it to rock enough to go over. They had a lot of different moving targets, which made it a lot of fun.
Oh, that sounds fun.
Yeah, it was a good match. Like, it was a good targetry. Targets USA crushed it. Everything worked. Like, I didn't see any like broken cables or janky like failure to activate because the setup didn't work. Like, everything seemed to run really well.
I like this. So you guys have been talking praise. What would you change about the match? What did you not like, or what do you wish was different, if anything?
Jeff, you go first.
More far shooting. I truly, and I don't know if this was a range constraint, because I do feel like they used the bays correctly, but I was dissatisfied in the fact, you know, and this is a personal opinion, that I changed to a 1-6 and I only used it 3 of the stages. I'm not saying I couldn't have used it the 9 other stages, but like when you tell me like we can go at the 200 yards and only 3 of the stages and in 2 of those went out to only 140 to 150, like it's kind of disappointing. And I'm not trying to make it more difficult, because if they stick to their MOA rule, then like it's not an issue. I definitely expected more further shooting with the rifle.
Yeah, and I mean, if I heard out to 200 meters or yards, whatever, I would be training with my Razor. That's the gun I'd be taking.
That's what I did.
That's 100%. But it's kind of cool knowing you can use more than one gun, because I would just take one with probably a Hollow Sun Ames and maybe a Tripler, and that I could take on or off, and then have another rifle with a Razor, and then that way I've got two guns if one craps out.
And that's the move I'm going to for next time or any other future PCSL match. Like it's, and for those who can't afford it, obviously a red dot with a Tripler would be your best option. But like for those who can, it makes sense just to have a 1-6 with an offset, and then a second gun or upper with a red dot with potentially a Tripler in case you have like weird further or a single engagement. I'll think of something else to improve. Tim, you go.
I think the two things, the preload thing, I think it was definitely a good idea. We've all seen like the GM make ready where the guy's up there for like 2 minutes and you're like, shoot the stage. So it eliminated that. But what it took away was your ability to at least dry flow a portion of the stage. Could have been shooting area one, even though you didn't get shooting area two and three. It would have helped, but you lost that opportunity right before your make ready to get your last full speed dry flow. Cause like you don't usually get one at full speed when everyone else is doing like the conga line, checking out the stage. And I think that's super important as someone that like could maybe overshoot a position or something like that. Cause I'm trying to go as fast as I can and decelerate. Like I need that full speed dry flow to really figure some shit out before I run it live. I think the preload kind of defeats that. So I would probably not do that again if I had that choice. The only other thing, I don't feel like there was a ton of opportunities to move and shoot with a rifle. It was pretty choppy in nature. Part of that was like my own stage planning and stuff that I need to exploit better. But there wasn't a ton of movement with rifle, which I think is a fun skill, because we know like moving with a rifle, for those that don't know, it's inherently a lot harder than a pistol.
It's very difficult.
Contact.
Yes.
More weight, it's crashing around everywhere. And if you practice that a lot, it's a skill you can leverage. And not everybody does that. Like watch a Nationals video, watch like Max or the top 20 guys in PCC. How much are they actually moving and shooting? The last couple of years, there's more of it, but they typically are going to move to a position, do a lot of shooting, and then move to another position. Versus like watch an open guy. He's going to move as much as he can. Like watch Christian. He's constantly moving. It's incredible. Mm-hmm. So I think that opportunity in some of the stages would have been a little more, say fun or even just advantageous. But that's really nitpicky, honestly. Like I walked away from it being like, that was really fun.
And a lot of the moving and shooting on your point, Tim, the most you had to move and shoot was maybe 10 yards.
Yeah.
Like it was easy. Totally. Like, and I get it from a newer shooter perspective, that kind of makes it hard. But like, if you're going to incorporate those type of transition targets, like, maybe like a couple more meters. The other thing I actually don't like about the rule book per se is that I feel like PCSL caters to 2011 shooters. Because even in the, you know, obviously I run Shadows. Okay, even
here we go.
Yeah, I know. Well, here's the thing.
Attack Tim.
Yeah, okay, no, it's not. Even in the practical division, you can have a essentially a 2011 as your practical pistol.
Well, that's a duty gun.
Duty rated.
Yeah. Duty. Oh, okay.
It's in the web. It's on the website.
Yeah. Okay. How many duty rated are running 2011s? Like, come on.
What about drop safe? We should do drop safe to be able to be in that division.
I have a locking holster. I'm not going to drop it. Or it did.
Uh-huh. It was essentially like you were almost at a disadvantage if you're running any sort of double DASA. Action. DASA.
What's your shadow weigh?
I don't know, like 40 ounces.
Yeah, that's more than my 2011 does. And weren't you running it on SA only?
Yeah, because I would have been at a disadvantage if I wasn't.
You're saying we have the same platform, basically.
I tell you what, Tim, if you're same saying my Shadow is just as equal as your 2011, I agree with that.
No, I think your point is, though, like a 2011 and a Glock, they're not the same gun. They do the same things, but like one of them makes it a little easier to do other things. So I do definitely get your point. I think some of the division stuff, I see where it's intended, but it's not doing what it's meant to. And like the example, in practical, you can have 21 rounds in the mag. My interpretation of that is you don't want a bunch of dudes like crazy followers, like shaving it down the night before, like I can fit 25 rounds and it might. And maybe that's like a removing money as a barrier to entry thing. They don't allow tripods. Like, I totally get that. You don't want Joel to show up with his $1,000 tripod and have this crazy advantage on the stage. But then I can't have a magwell practical on my rifle. But I can buy a lower with a magwell basically built into it. But so I can buy advantage in one spot, but I can't buy it in another. So I think some of the rules, like in the divisional rules, to Jeff's point, are like, yeah, but also, you know.
It makes sense. I'd be most worried about you guys' cheater muzzle brake thing, I guess, is where I feel like there's a big disparity. Or like low mass
bolt carrier. If you're running a four prong against that, yeah.
Yeah.
You do have to have full weight bolt carrier group. So like whatever, maybe it's like they weigh like as long as it's 11 or 12 ounces, whatever full mass is, like you're good. You do have to have full mass and practical. You can have a captured spring that's allowed, I believe. But obviously, you're not going to be able to get a lot of them because you're running full mass, so you're limited. You can only run 30 rounds in the mag. Yes, you have the device rule, but then again, I can run a suppressor. It's like, if I can run a can, does my RCB reduced concussion break thing really matter? Like,
I'll take the can.
In my opinion, that's a $100 way to get some of the benefits of an actual can. What else is there for practical versus competition that are kind of nuanced? Yeah, I can't run a magwell, which I don't really understand. Like, if I'm a cop and I have a patrol rifle, I don't believe I'm going to have a magwell on that thing. Like, I'll take every advantage I can get through the worst day of my career, right? Like, why wouldn't and I?
Sure. On top of that, like, you can't have a magwell on your rifle, but if the rifle comes with a flared
That's my point.
Magwell, like, that's legal.
Mm-hmm. Totally different.
So, like, there's a little nuances that, like, if you really want to game it, you could game the hell out of it. But like, obviously we're criticizing it, but I feel like we're also nitpicking at this point.
I was gonna say, if this is the biggest thing you guys have to complain about, it sounds like overall this was pretty good.
Correct. Oh yeah. No,
I think agreed. By having two divisions, it is so much better. Like, we've all been in a match where it's like, oh, like that guy's running that division. It's like, what the fuck
is going on? He's looking for soft wins that divisions. Way.
100%. Which, never mind. I'm not getting into that.
Oh, please do name names.
Somebody
which top,
I could
top shooter do you think it's the most soft wins?
Have a
do
it, Tim. Where it was like maybe unmagnified on your rifle and like irons on a pistol, because I know some are in irons, which like, okay, weird, grandpa, but I'm just kidding. But like, I think the practical and competition divisions in and of themselves, like, they delineate pretty well. And I think it was kind of cool to see, like, I'm pretty sure Brian Nelson shot like 96 or 98% in practical of what the guys did in competition. So like, it wasn't a giant disparity at the highest level, at least, between the two divisions.
That's cool. So, I mean, my last question for you guys, would you guys go again? It sounds like you would. You wouldn't talk somebody else out of going to that match in the future. No words of caution.
I would try to talk people into going. Like, I plan on ending 25 season with that match. Jeff?
Yeah, no, I think they did it right on doing it in December, since I don't have to do with the range or the fact that he was just trying to avoid timing for all the other seasons and Nats. But I think the time frame worked really well. I would go again. Obviously, I would change my equipment based on what we just talked about. Not to gain the competitive edge, but no, I'm sticking to my Shadows. But I will say, I think the venue has a lot to do with it. And if I remember right, I think, Tim, you mentioned this, like, Prairie Fire is no longer allowing outside competitions. I don't know a whole lot about that besides it's not potentially going to be there again next year.
Yeah, so that was something that popped up a couple of days before PCSL released like their membership thing, and with it came a forum, and I was on it one night, and people were talking about how the range doesn't want to hold basically like anything coming from an outside entity. I think it sounds like they want to do vendor training probably for law enforcement, military, and their own classes in-house, and just completely delineate it, like we run our own thing, which I'm sure from like a just a control aspect would be totally better. That being said, I doubt they make in a week what they made with 300 people shooting nationals there over, you know, 5 days between staff and the main match. But yeah, we'll see where it is next year. I'm hoping it's at Prairie Fire. I thought the range was super adequate for the match itself, even like they could have done more. I thought the bays gave a lot of size and options, and there was also a test fire for a rifle, a separate one for test firing pistol. Super easy to get to if you want to stay in Vegas. You're 45 minutes from Vegas. If you wanted to stay in Paul Rump, you're 15-20 minutes. Yeah, I thought it was a great range. I thought they ran a great match there, super efficient, and it was just fun. Like, it was a fun match. I like that format a lot. I like the run and gun aspect of like the multi-gun thing, but with the accountability of like, yeah, score points here.
And that's the biggest thing I like about this format is the fact that it's hit factor based. It's not two on paper and you go. Like, no, you actually have to add some accuracy in there. And I do know he is changing the target a bit for the future, yeah, which I'm kind of glad, because like even I got lucky with a couple K zones, which are now changing to T zones.
A lucky miss gives you
no, 100%. And honestly, like, in I think they've already figured this out, but like the A zone was way too generous. It really was. Okay.
Joel, I'm texting you the new target.
Oh boy,
it's actually pretty good. So like, those that obviously can't see, it looks like a IPSC had a baby with a PCSL target.
And I'm sure that's too.
I think the one on the left is the one they. Yeah, I think the one on the left is the one they intend to use here. It was the explanation was kind of it was loud in the like venue we were in, so it's kind of hard to tell. And I think the one on the right looks more like a IPSC turtle is one they want to use internationally.
The one on the right, their goal, that makes sense.
It looks like it, right? I think their goal is to try to grow PCSL eventually outside of the States. Which, like, why wouldn't you? You have a good idea and you want to spread it everywhere. But yeah, I think the K-zone being humongous, it catches a lot of errors. Like, I remember a lot of times in training, a buddy of ours who we shoot with, he was like, yeah, you're going to like the K-zone. And I was like, what do you mean? And then, like, a couple times, like, oh, Kilo Mike. Like, oh, that's sweet. Like, there's my 10 points on that target. So I think shrinking is a good idea. I know some guys leverage the K-zone. So, like, say you come in on a set of targets, you don't want to add a reload in the stage. Like, okay, cool. Aim, get a good, like, confirmation three. And go reactive and like pop kilo and get out of there with two rounds versus four for putting two on the paper. It's not something that I think either of us did intentionally. Like, just not having match experience in this format, I wasn't going to try to just go for the kilo and then like shoot Alpha Mike. Like, that didn't seem like it was worth the reward, risk versus reward.
Yeah. I will say, if there's a PCSL match within driving distance, and, you know, to each their own what they classify as driving distance, definitely go to it. Like, bring what you got. Yeah. Go shoot it. Because this was Tim and I's first nationals, or actually first PCSL outside of, like, work, where, you know, two-gun is the thing. So definitely be shooting more two-gun, if not three gun style matches, to help prep for this in the future.
Dude, I like it. I would go if there's one closer also. That's why I shoot I've shot our local UML, whatever. I just like roll up with whatever I've got and just like, it's fun. It's fun trying something new. It's fun getting to shoot a carbine a bit. So
it's also just like a different atmosphere in some way. Like, we talked about the ROs and what'd you call them, T-Rex shooters?
Yeah, T-Rex.
Like, what a lot of people would call like tactical Timmies. And then you've got like your USPSA guys, and you've got your three gunners. Yeah. Like, it's a fun integration of all these people. You got Hunter Constantine running around like Crocs or some shit. Like, I think he's wearing Birkenstocks.
Would not
like
surprise
it's definitely
me.
Like a yeah. I'm pretty confident.
Hunter's so nice. I like him.
He's super really nice guy.
He's so silly.
Like, if you wanted to, like, oh, I'm gonna go shoot this match like from concealment and with my truck gun, because you have a truck gun or some shit. Like, that's not a bad venue to go do it. Like, oh, I want to run my suppressed 9mm, like Zenith MP5. Like, you could go run that. You
have hopefully a like clearing plan. Malfunctions, but.
I got to send that back 3 times before it functions, right?
Third time's a charm. Yeah, I should have it the third time's a charm. Soon. Or you just buy the HK after the second trip and.
Yeah, buy the at OG.
Yeah. Dude, that thing's fun.
Can't hide money.
How dare you insult my Zenith? Too soon. Well, guys, I think this was good. Anything else to talk about? I think this, like, give people at least a chance to, or an idea of what's going on and why they should give it a try. I'm interested.
Yeah, I think anybody coming from a USPSA background that shoots carbine, I think they would benefit from this type of a match in a lot of ways. Like, one, you get to test your rifle skills, not just hit two on paper. You got to shoot good points. Two, I think there's no way that you can carry out a 60-second stage plan 12 times in high detail and still shoot good points and not see a carryover the next time you do like a 14-second USPSA field course later. It's going to help you. That is just a fun match. Good environment, good people.
I like it. David, any final thoughts from you?
No, it was such a relaxed environment that like it was very inviting, regardless of what your skill level was. And sometimes you may not experience that at your local, you know, USPSA club where, you know, you draw 3 feet in front of you and get DQ'd. So like it's definitely something that I will be continuing to do in the future. And then if you don't have a carbine, I mean, this is a perfect opportunity to then get into it without breaking the bank, honestly. Like, totally. It's like, I'm not ashamed to go shoot this with an Anderson lower. Nothing wrong with Anderson, but like, we all know that is the cheapest of the cheap, and I've done it plenty of times.
It's budget, it's price point,
but yeah, it works
fine. But like, no, it's but lower. Like, even if you bought an Aero parts kit and put like a relatively worth LMT or LG trigger and then put like a decent barrel in it and buy any Hollow Sun dot, you could buy a Hollow Sun 403, the Hollow Sun T2 costs like $125, and you could go out there with that and a Glock and a holster with some kind of retention, even if it's a bungee cord, and you could shoot this match. I would nationals, but like you could do that at a local PCSL.
Yeah,
and you'd have a blast. Now, yeah, I understand like 223 is expensive. There's limitations there. Maybe shoot a lot of K zones so you don't have to use like a few rounds on any target. But like you could definitely shoot this with a lower barrier to entry and have a blast.
Like it.
Especially versus like a multi-gun, right? Like we're gonna shoot a little bit of 3-gun this year. Like, okay, just to get
into that game, that
you now need whatever. Now you need 3 guns. And guess what? Like none of them are cheap at that level if you want to have a good time and be competitive. So there's a huge barrier to entry just on cost, let alone the skill level of like learning how to quad load, learning how to call wins, like all that shit.
Dude, facts. I like it. Well, I appreciate you guys taking the time. This was good, mm-hmm. I think. Plus, it answered all of my questions because I was curious what was up anyway. So
I'm just going to get you to come with us next year.
That'd be cool. I'll even let you load my mags and maybe even pick me up from the airport. That'd be fun.
Hey, someone has maybe to be a put on Instagram.
Somebody might care for it.
Nah, it'd be fun to hang out with you boys. Well, anyway, appreciate you guys taking the time. Training group members, if you have questions for either of these nincompoops, just drop them below in the comments. And who knows, I'll get these guys back on, or we'll even have Max if we need to. So anyway, appreciate you guys taking the time. This was good.
Yeah, hey, man. Thanks.
Thank you for listening to Training Group Live. Stay up to date at practicalshootingtraininggroup.com or pstg.us for short. If you have a question or a comment, head to the Training Group Live section of the forum. Remember, the best questions turn into show topics. If you aren't a member of PSTG, we hope today is the day we earn your subscription. And with that, train frequently, train hard, but most of all, train smart.